Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of July 29th. I'm John Gibson, and summer's here. At least it feels like it, and I'm here with Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy? Keeping cool?
I'm feeling summery.
That's bad, man.
Or maybe that's just a summary judgment. I don't know. But no, I'm good. Oh. Ooh, sorry. But anyway, yeah, it seems like rainy season is over. And now we're into the hot season.
Well, I would normally be really happy that we're into the hot season, but I'm really feeling blue, especially tonight. Do you want to know why?
I do.
Because there were like three PL teams this weekend that played in powdery, bluish kind of uniforms, and it really I couldn't tell them apart sometimes. And when I was looking at the highlights, I didn't know who I was looking at. We had Lotte had like sky powder blue, SoftBank had
these
pale blue uniforms, and then the Lions they had some blue, a little darker shade of powder sky blue. I don't know. It was, and then the Dragons and Bay Stars just committed fashion crime today all over the field. With their
matching. They're both wearing, they're almost this, essentially matching uniforms.
So I'm feeling blue. It was awful. It was a very bad fashion NPB weekend, and I'm feeling blue about it. And I hope somebody needs to actually be in control of these uniforms. You can't just let these teams run and pick their own clothes. Obviously, they don't know how to dress right. We've got to be able to tell the visiting team from the home team, or vice versa, or just the teams. Just be able to tell them apart. This was awful.
Right.
This was awful.
It is probably the most dastardly thing that we've seen this year in Japan.
Well, do something.
That's none of my business, baby.
All right. Well, what is your business is what's on this week's show. And on this week's show, we have a chat with Tyler Epler of Oryx. We're going to discuss the Buffaloes. We're going to look at the playoff races in both leagues and a whole lot more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I went to MetLife Dome about a week ago on July 21st, and I caught up with right-hander Tyler Epler of Oryx. He's a first-year pitcher from Texas. He is originally from Texas. He was in the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. He's 26. He's a big kid. He's a guy, I mean, you're going to listen to the interview, and I think you're going to like him, but you can't help but root for him. I can't help but root for him personally, and I'll tell you why. When I met him...
Why is that?
I met him just before the team went out for the stretch. As you know, when the visiting team goes to MetLife Dome or Sabre Dome, the guys come out on the field a little bit, and they get ready for, the team stretch and calisthenics and all that stuff. And I said, "Hi, Tyler, I'm John Gibson. I just want to get 5 minutes with you whenever you have time." And he said, "Sure." So he came in from the outfield after doing his work out there. And we went to the mirror room behind the dugout and in between the dining hall, as you know, on the visitor side. You know, the fans probably do not know, but a few of our listeners know. What's up, Jason? What's up, Claudio? And so... So we were standing in that hallway there, and we're talking, and the first thing Tyler does before I even ask him a question is he says, "Hey, you want a bottle of water?" And I've been covering, we've been doing this show obviously for, this is our ninth season. We've done a lot of interviews.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
Hey man, it gets hot in the summer. I have never had a player offer me anything. Especially, no matter how hot I am. So, this was a first.
I have one. Dennis Sarfate once gave me a bottle of water.
Okay, all right.
Which is, again, not a surprise.
Now, we're not doing anything, granted. The reporters are all standing around. We're waiting to get a chance to talk to some of the players who are actually working pretty hard. A lot of them come in and they're just dripping with sweat, especially in the summer. Especially at Cebu Dome.
Right,
it's Cebu Sauna, right? So, and I did say Cebu Dome. Apologies, MetLife. But... Yeah, I've never had anybody offer me anything. And, we can be sweating there, too. You could just be standing there and just be dripping because it's a sauna. So I thought, well, this guy is a really nice guy, and I'm going to root for him no matter how good or bad an interview we have. But we had a really nice chat, and, I can't say anything bad about a player like that who's going to take the time to offer me something or anything in that situation. So that was a first for me.
So are you setting me up? It's my job to say something bad, or?
I don't know. We'll have to see. But in the meantime, okay. We offer to you Tyler Epler. All right, we're here with Tyler Epler of the Oryx Buffaloes. Thank you for taking some time with us this week. Appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Now, how has your transition to MPB been? Because I know it's difficult for a lot of guys coming for that first year.
It was. I mean, I came in kind of confident, I guess, maybe a little too overconfident. Had a good year in AAA, and they told me that I would need some adjustments coming in and facing Japanese hitters. And I kind of took that with a grain of salt, which I probably shouldn't have now looking back on it. But I kind of had some struggles at first, especially getting lefties out. They're a whole different type of hitters, just a different strike zone. So I kind of struggled at first, and I'm usually a fast learner, and I wasn't in this case, so that was kind of really frustrating for me. But now looking back on it, it was a good learning experience for me, so I'm getting to progress even further now looking back on that.
All right, now it looks like you only pitched out of the bullpen in the maybe past couple years. I don't even know extensively. In one year in 2014, I think mm-hmm. it was, that you had pitched out of the bullpen a couple times. So yeah. What's this whole experience about or the adjustment that mm-hmm. you're going through pitching out of the bullpen?
Yeah, that's been a big change too. In the past with the Pirates, when I did pitch out of the bullpen, it was you're throwing the sixth inning, you're getting a clean inning. So I knew when I was throwing I'd have enough time to get ready for that inning, but to now here it's, hey, you got the next inning, and that's been a big change, and I've never gotten to experience that, so that's definitely been a big learning experience, and adjusting to those, finding out what I need to do to be ready, to be successful, and all those types of deals. So it's been a lot of learning since I've got here.
How have you changed your whole preparation then for going into a game?
I think for me, whenever I go into a game and I'm not thinking and I'm not overanalyzing things, I'm better. So the bullpen, I think, in a way, has been a lot better for me. It's, hey, you got the next inning, and that could be in 2 minutes, that could be in 10 minutes. So for me, it's just, hey, get up, get going, get loose, and feel good, go out there and get them. And I think that's been a big deal for me. It's been good for me. And not too much time to think about, hey, what's our game plan for today? It's just go out there and compete.
Good, good. Now you mentioned pitching the lefties here was a kind of a different animal. What kind of adjustments have you made in your pitching to get these Japanese batters out?
I've actually added a split or fork, whichever you want to call it. I hadn't gone with either or.
I call them sporks.
So there you go. I might have to use that.
Feel free.
But I actually added that. The pitching coaches have been telling me I should add one, but I was kind of hesitant on it because in the past my changeup's been my best pitch. But for some reason, these lefties here, the fading pitch going away from them, they're able to stay on those pretty well.
And serve them in the left.
That's it. So granted, I have been giving up a lot of hits to lefties, but most of them are weak hit singles. So just finding a way to miss that bat instead of getting a weak hit. So I think the split or the fork will be a good vertical break pitch that can miss a bat.
Now, how long is it taking you to get it ready, game ready? he's laughing, funny. People.
It's funny you say that because they told me, so I was like, okay, well, come show me a grip, I'll do it. So I threw a flat ground, I threw a couple, and they're like, man, that's good. So we go into a game. I didn't end up throwing that day. And they're like, hey, you want to work on the split off the mound? I'm like, sure, let's get a few off the mound and see how it goes. I want to work on this, get comfortable with it, try different grips, and so I got off the mound and I threw about five of them, and they were like, hey, it's game ready, go in the game. And I'm like, I'd rather work on this and kind of go forward with it and keep tinkering with it. But sure enough, the next day I threw probably about five in the game, and I had a good feel for it. I thought it'd be harder to command, honestly, I thought it was going to be the big deal, but it was actually pretty good. Not too bad. You can just be aggressive with it, and when it's down, it's good for me. And so just keep messing with it day by day and changing small things, but so far it feels really good.
Awesome. All right. Now, you won your first game in Japan on June 14th against Hanshin, and then you come back the next night and you win another game. What was the positive and negative about winning back-to-back games like that? And then being the hero interview, too.
Yeah, I don't know if there was a negative to it, honestly. It was a lot of good stuff. I mean, it's awesome. Dude, your first win. They saved the ball for me, so I got to keep that. And then come back the next night and did the same thing. So they gave me that one as well. So that was really good. And then I think it was maybe 4 or 5 days after that, I got another win. I came in and
yeah, you had three in the month of June. Yeah.
So then by that time, my nickname was Lucky Boy. Everybody's calling me Lucky Boy. So it was a lot of fun. I mean, of course, getting wins is awesome, but just going out there and doing my job, and I guess I did get lucky that happened to score the next inning.
All right. Well, yes, you got those wins, and yes, you came out of the bullpen to get them, but this bullpen has seemed to suffer and struggle and be up and down and have a lot of frustrated fans out there. So how do you view the bullpen?
I think we're all working as hard as we can to be as consistent as possible. So that's been my biggest deal. I've always been a guy who tries to be as consistent as possible, so just try to add some stability to it. And it's working through some things, and guys may be struggling with different deals, and I've definitely been a victim of it, of falling into patterns where hitters pretty much know what's coming because you've done it so many times. And so I think that's another big deal for me with lefties, is going into lefties more, because lefties get pretty comfortable, because I like to throw changeups and fastballs away to them. So just small things like that I think our guys have struggled with, but we're all making those little changes and trying to become more consistent.
Do you see yourself possibly being a closer and closing some games?
I mean, I'm completely prepared for that. Yeah, I am. But as far as that, I think they still want me to transition into the bullpen and get more and more comfortable with it before they put me into those really meaningful innings. And but it's been a good change so far. I think I've done well with it so far, but just growing and learning more and more as much as I can.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, it still is your first year. I got that. So we're into the second half of the season. As we stand here today, the team is 7 games under .500. So at what point do you guys start to adjust your expectations for playoffs and all that stuff?
That was kind of our meeting at the end of the second half. It was, hey, I think we're 4 games back from the third place team. So it's from here, it's just trying to fight our way into the playoffs, find a way in there. And then once you get to the playoffs, anybody knows that anything can happen. So being the first place team going into playoffs doesn't mean anything. It's a whole new ball game. So our goal is just to fight to get into those playoffs and into that spot.
Yeah, and it's not that there's not that much separation. Yeah. I mean, everybody's about in the 40-win area, so it's pretty close. Yeah. Now, a number of experts and media types, and myself included, we love the talent on this team, but it just seems like there's always some barrier. Something happens. You've been with the team long enough to see some of the things that happen, including just not being able to close out games.
Yeah.
So how do you cope with some of these losses?
It's tough, but I mean, once a game's over, we forget about it and learn from it, and then put it in the past, focus on the next one. If you dwell on those losses, those blown saves, those losses, and I mean, that just leads to a domino effect. So it lets you, once you get past those, I think it clears your mind for the next one. It has been tough in games, and I've done it as well. So just learning from them and building towards that next one. I think we also are a really young team, so it's definitely some good experience. I'm a big believer that your biggest learning experiences are your failures, so you can learn from those, and we'll put ourselves in a good position for the future.
One of my phrases is losing is learning.
That's it.
And you certainly take that home with you, so it sticks with you a lot longer. Mm-hmm. Now you're only 26. This will be our last question here. You're only 26, so what's your goal here in coming to Japan?
My goal is just being as consistent as possible, like I said. I think it's awesome that I can come here, make a living for my family, and provide for them. So at the same time, I'm also playing at a really high level of baseball. So getting to compete against some of the best in the world to do it. Obviously, the MLB is probably the top, but the MPB is right underneath it. So just coming over here and facing these hitters, I mean, you see the guys that go over to the States and Ohtani and Kikuchi and obviously Ichiro and those guys. So you know you're facing good talent. So just coming over here and competing against these guys and seeing where you rank up and just try to be the best you can be.
All right. Well, good luck. Good luck. Yeah. We're watching.
Appreciate it.
All right. Appreciate the time. All right. Thanks a lot, Tyler. It was a blast talking to you. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was good to hear from you again. It was also kind of a blast from the past because John talked about some of the things that we talked about in April.
Really? I didn't know that. Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah. Well, I guess the number one is I said my first impression of his pitching that I shared on the podcast. And I said, I figured that you would make a couple of adjustments and you'd be fine. And he said, well, I'm disappointed that it's taking me this long to make those couple of adjustments.
Yeah, well, yeah, talk to some of the other guys who never, ever, ever were able to make the adjustments.
Indeed. So, you know, the interesting, you know, a couple of things obviously really grabbed me. One is a grain of salt, you know, talking that this is one of the, you know, it's a cliche, but it's very appropriate. And I haven't heard somebody use that to describe coming to Japanese baseball and dealing with the advice they get. But I've heard about a dozen different players say more or less the same thing.
Right.
You know, it didn't occur to them that it could be different in some ways. You know, even you can be told it's going to be different, but until you actually see it. And I think what this is that what I mean is that people seem to attribute how they do things, how people act around them in their daily lives, how people function at work,
right,
as the norm.
Right.
And then they move into a different context. You know, and if you're in an industry or something like baseball, and more or less everybody does, you know, if Major League Baseball, then more or less everybody does more or less the same basic things. The norms there are set. You know what the norms are. You know what's abnormal. But then you come to Japan, and a lot of the things that you thought were normal have shifted.
They didn't make the trip.
yeah. You know, what is that? What do you mean? Okay. So my point being that it's very disconcerting. You know, everybody, without exception, the same people that says, oh, well, it was hard for me to adjust, also say, oh, baseball's baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But what they have to do in order to get from saying baseball is baseball to making baseball as baseball is a process of understanding which of those things they are used to are the same and which are not. So that was interesting. So, of course, the first one he brought up was, I guess, the most common one. And you know what amazes me is, as you said, we've been doing this podcast for 9 years, and this is something that really didn't occur to me until like 6 months ago,
mm-hmm,
or 9 months ago.
Ooh, what is it? What is it? What is it?
Now, again, yeah. Yeah, well, it's the left-handed hitters, you know, the high number of guys who are just trying to slap the ball who are left-handed hitters, which is they have them in MLB, but they've got a few of them in MLB. In Japan, they have a whole subclass.
Right, right.
And most of them and like two-thirds of them are left-handed hitters. In Japan, in America, they're pretty evenly distributed. But so that's one thing. And so the other things, I think, one thing I want to mention is changeup, because one is there's two things going on here. And Jay Jackson said basically I stopped throwing my changeup to most left-handed hitters,
right?
Except for guys who were really swinging from the heels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now that's the reason why the changeup is less effective. Another is that the NPB ball doesn't run as much. You don't get as much horizontal run on your straight pitches, your splitter, your fastball, your two-seamer, your shoot, and your change are not going to move horizontally as much as they do with a major league ball.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing. And then the guy at some point before in shows in the past. So.
Yeah. So, and the other one is that guys are taking little cuts. You know, they're not trying to hit the ball over the fence. They're trying to, as you said, line it into left field or
serve it, yeah,
ground it between third and short. Serve it. Exactly. Serve it is a perfect word. So that's that. And so I think what'll happen eventually is he'll find a room to throw that change up. He'll find ways to get a good feel for it using the Japanese ball, and he'll find hitters who against whom it's really effective.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of Japanese pitchers do throw change-ups, I think probably more lefties than righties, but I think he will do that. And then the other thing is in regard to the splitter or the fork ball or the John Gibson pitch, the spork.
The spork.
Okay. Well, you know, that bit about that whole bit about, you know, throw it six times. Okay, you can throw it in games. You know what? You know, like show. It's like, what did he go to the mound one day? And as he was warming up, the coach came out to chat with him and said, "This is how you throw a fork ball. Let's see you throw it in the first inning."
Let's see you throw it in the first inning.
It wasn't much different from what they asked him to do. And I remember talking to Tsuyoshi Wada about It was in 2005. Before, 2006.
Okay.
Before the playoffs, about the. About his changeup, he says, "I've been working on a changeup for like 3 years, and I'm just feeling comfortable throwing it in games. I wouldn't try it for 2 years."
Wow.
Everybody told me, try it, and he didn't, well, of course, he didn't have to either, because his other stuff was really good. So he didn't have to, but now, and of course, now the changeup's probably his best pitch.
Right, you hear that? But, you hear that, Buffalo's 2 years. Yeah, I you know, when Tyler said that, I said five practice tosses, I just wanted to give him a hug. I thought about wanting to slap someone in the Oryx brain trust, and I thought, okay, this is the kind of thing we discuss about Oryx that makes them sound like they don't know what they're doing. You know, we want to question leadership, we want to question the front office, the field manager, the direction. And then I started to think, well, wait a minute, that's a real micro look at it. Maybe I should step back a second and not think, you know, it's absurdly Buffalonian, and try to think the macro. And what I came up with was they analyzed and they assessed Tyler's pitches, and they said he needs something, just like he said, something that breaks vertically that he can use as a mm-hmm. weapon, and he needs it now. It's immediate. We need him to throw it now. Just show him the grip and let him work it out in the games, because then, as he said later on in the chat, they're not putting him in a lot of meaningful innings at the moment anyway. So let's get him comfortable throwing it. So yes, I thought it was crazy, but and yes, I thought it was something, you know, only Oryx would do, and it still might be. However, I thought about the bullpen woes that Oryx has been experiencing this season, and I just thought, okay, well, we've heard, at least I remember talking to guys, and I think it was Alonzo Powell, because Alonzo Powell, when he came to the Dragons, I don't think he came at the beginning of his first season. I think he came after spring training, and so they just wanted they wanted to get him used to playing in games because they saw a future. And so that's what I'm thinking here, is Oryx sees a future with, you know, like I said, Tyler's only 26. They want to get him used to playing in all the parks, pitching on all the mounds, used to what he talked about, getting ready for games when he only has 2 minutes maybe, or maybe 10 minutes, because you never know when that inning is going to end. And just get used to everything. And the goal is to have him ready to be a really effective pitcher for them next year. Maybe that's the plan.
Maybe.
So that's what I thought. Yeah. I'm hoping.
Or maybe they just... Now, okay,
or maybe they just don't have a clue.
I mean, that's possible. I doubt that's the case. I doubt that's
Who
the case.
Knows?
I think it's just more... I think it's more just a case of... this was seemed like the... I think it's often more this seemed like the best thing to do at the time.
Well, yeah, and like...
That kind of fits with our overall plan.
Yeah, and if he...
And I think they do have a... overall plans. I just don't often understand
how cloudy it is. Yeah, it's a really cloudy one. But like he said, he has had his issues with some left-handed hitters, and maybe they just wanted him to find a way to deal with that right away, and the mm-hmm. fork ball was the best way to do it, or the spork.
Yeah, well if it's working, yeah, good for them.
Well, I mean, it doesn't really even have to work. It just has to be in the threat. It has to be a threat. The hitter has to see it a couple times and think maybe he'll throw another fork ball or a splitter or a spork.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that'll get the bat going a little bit later, or they'll take a pitch, or you know, if you got his problems against left-handers, maybe they needed him to do that. But you know, I loved his explanation also about the bullpen in that situation, because that's something I don't think, as observers, we don't often give a lot of weight to. for example, when a reliever comes into a game, does he come in a clean inning? Does he come in with guys on base? Does he come in and because somebody hit a batter in the head and they've been ejected from the game? And now you don't have time to do your regular routine, and you're not really ready to throw or ready to pitch and get batters out. You're just ready to, you're just now getting warmed up, but you're out of warm-up pitches. So him talking about, or Tyler talking about, how he gets ready. He didn't tell us how exactly what his routine is, but the fact that he might have to go right away, or that he might have to stand around waiting because you just don't know when the inning is going to end. And that puts it into perspective about getting ready to actually get out there on the mound and try to get guys out with your pitches. It's a lot different in the bullpen, certainly. So I enjoyed hearing that.
Now, do you want to keep going and say about when somebody gets kicked out of a game? Because when they do, you have as much time as you want to warm up.
I know you do, but I mean, what happens is, for me, that's fine.
You feel pressured to get out there.
Oh, I don't think so at all. I just think a guy has a routine. Like first, maybe he does a little bit of long toss. Then he does some stretching exercises. Then, or maybe it's vice versa. He starts with certain stretching exercises. Then he does a little bit of long toss. Then he gets on the mound and starts with this pitch, that pitch, and the other pitch. But when you're brought into the game, if there is an ejection, usually the guy's sitting down, right? So he hasn't done his stretching. He doesn't have time to do any long toss or anything like that. He only gets to go onto the mound and throw as many pitches as he likes to get warmed up. Well, does that really warm you up? All right, well, let's talk about the Buffaloes in general. I was pretty sure they would not get the sweep today against the SoftBank Hawks, the barely first place SoftBank Hawks, because it takes a little bit of gumption to get those sweeps. They're not easy. I mean, sometimes the teams get them, but when you get the first two in a series, I think that the team, no matter who's coming out to pitch in that third game of a series, especially if a team is at home, pride really comes before anything, and teams don't want to get swept. And I just think it's really hard to close. It's just like closing out a series in a playoff situation. I think teams play a little bit with a little bit more desperation. So I just think it's a little bit harder. I don't have any proof, but and the numbers might not support it. But the outcome is the outcome. I think the game is going to be difficult. But in this case,
well, I think one thing that happened was, now this is the first time that Daichi Takeyasu has faced a team for the second time.
Uh huh.
With this year with Oryx, and so I think that was one thing. And the Hawks are, I'm just going to give them credit for making good adjustments, because they seem to do pretty much everything else really well, all the fundamental stuff. And I wouldn't, I could use a lot of psychobabble, but it wouldn't sway anybody's arguments. And I think he's been very good, but he wasn't very good today. And then of course, Norifumi Nishimura said, well, we failed to get the bunt down, and that basically ruined our game in the first inning.
Yeah, I saw your tweet.
Well, I did a study about it. I was kind of intrigued by that, because I did a study some years ago in which I found pitchers with run support. If you took a group of pitchers and you matched, you looked at how each pitcher did when he had run support and when he didn't, and you found that the pitchers when they had run support generally had an ERA of about a half a run to two-thirds of a run lower.
Right.
And so I thought that was, that's a study I did back probably 13, 15 years ago. So I kind of did a quick one. And so that's on my website, so you can see that there.
At jballisland.com.
Correct. So there's some reference to that. And I thought it was really a dumb thing to say by Nishimura, but having looked at it, I wonder.
I think in the past we talked about the importance of having that one run, but in a game in which you don't pitch well, I don't think the one run really makes a big difference, but... That's the other thing.
It's
the tone, and I get it. I get the whole impact of on the pitching, but I don't think that was today.
Well, no, I don't think it was the main thing, because then you're assuming that, well, he wouldn't have had those problems to begin with.
Yeah.
if somehow having a run would change his approach. And I think his approach was flawed from the start, and that was the problem. And I think having a run wouldn't have changed much. But in a number of cases, and I'm only talking about one run, not two or three or four or anything, but it looks to have an influence on how many runs pitchers allow.
Right. So when I went out a week ago and talked to Tyler, I also bumped into, of course, Brandon Dixon. And we had him on the show years and years ago, it seems. And we haven't had him back on. We just haven't had an opportunity to get him back on. And obviously I say that, and I could have talked to him a week ago, but I wanted to get one of the newer players on there. And I also bumped into Steven Moya, who was traded from Chunichi to Oryx during the season here in June. And, you know, he was asking me a lot of questions about learning Japanese and all that stuff. And I remembered his interview, and I said, you know, all those times that you were talking about the fact that you have learned a new position when you can play first base now. And I said, all that has really paid off. And actually, I thought to myself, well, it's as if he knew he would be with another team and fairly soon, the way we heard him talk. So I'm anxious to talk to him again and get him on the show. And, you know, in talking to Brandon Dixon, going back to him, I asked him about how his adjustment is going as far as being a bullpen guy as opposed to a starter. And, you know, he said, well, it's a big adjustment. And I said, how do you get used to, which is my big thing, coming to the park, doing the mental preparation, and then not appearing in a game, and then coming to the park the next day and going through the same process? How do you stay sharp? And he said, that's part of the process. That's part of the adjustments as well. And I'm learning on a daily basis. And that was basically the night after he had blown a save, and then my buddy Hirotoshi Zenshimasui actually lost the game, giving up a home run in extra innings. So that was the night after that debacle, if you want to call it that. So that whole situation, it was fresh in his mind and everything. And so it's really difficult, I think, for these guys to make this adjustment, Tyler included, but we've seen the Oryx Buffalo's bullpen in flux the entire season, and I just think, you know, they're just in emergency. It's like a triage, you know. They had injuries, they had ineffective pitchers, they've just right. had problems, and they've just tried to tuck away. I look at if Yoshinobu Yamamoto, their ace, hadn't been so good as a starter, I would have thought, well, they might throw him back in the bullpen, but he has been the best starter. He has been great for him. So
I finally got to watch a game. I hadn't seen a game of his for a while. So I watched most of that SoftBank game.
He was
dynamite.
Isn't he,
I mean,
awesome?
He's just just really heavy, the really heavy cutter and the fast, just the fastball and the cutter was just enough to, you know, they didn't know whether to sit or stand. Yeah. They didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, he's good, and then
he kept everybody off the barrels. The two hits he gave up in the sixth—I think they were in the sixth inning—were basically accidents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most of the outs he got were accidents. Guys missing the barrel. You know, basically everybody's missing the barrel. Everybody's making contact. I think he struck out four guys. Okay, blew it in the ninth inning, but yeah, who cares?
Yeah,
great game.
Yeah, it was a good game for them. And you know, with the way he's pitching, I wanted to include him in, and I think somebody asked me at work, what about Yamamoto for the Sawamura? And, you know, he just doesn't have the victory total, and therefore he won't get the winning percentage. But everything else...
Right, and he's also not a big strikeout
guy,
pitcher either.
Yeah, everything else he's competitive in, but I wouldn't... I mean, unfortunately, if you don't get... If he would had double digits in wins right now, somehow, and a few more strikeouts, he probably would be among those mentioned for the Sawamura, but because he's not winning a lot of games, and that, through no fault of his own... I did see my buddy Aozora put out run support numbers for NPV pitchers, and I think he was at the top of the list for fewest runs in terms of support.
He was at the top for the bottom.
At the top. Well, what is the top and what is at the bottom? I think at the top meaning he doesn't get very many. Aozora also put out this list of Yamamoto's average fastball speeds, and he's been mostly in the 150 range. You know, just over 150 kilometers per hour range for most of the season. So he started out a little bit in the 148 range, but he's been hard, been throwing harder, and been throwing harder.
That's not recently. Normal.
Yeah, it isn't. So the guys, and this is his first year as a starter, so they're doing really well in that respect.
Well, his first full year as a starter, he did start a little bit.
Yeah. But he was mostly bullpen guys last year.
Correct.
So I mean, again, we look at the talent. I want to blame Skipper Nishimura for the lack of change in the team, but I mean, it's difficult when you find out that they're bringing in guys and telling them to throw a pitch that they've only thrown five times in a game. If they're doing that with some of the foreign guys, what are they doing with the Japanese players? But I don't know. I expected more out of the team, and to say all these negative things. They don't have the worst record in NPB. They only have the worst record in the Pacific League. So, I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's a relief. They were probably thinking, good, we won't be seventh this year.
Yeah.
I'm saying, I look at them and I think, what have they got going for them? It was, I mentioned the pitching, and basically their starting pitching has been really pretty good.
Yes.
And Brandon Nixon has been really effective in relief, and Epler's been really effective in relief. They've had Hirotoshi Masui went down with being ineffective, which he does every two or three years now, I guess. I'm surprised they haven't brought him back and asked him to start, but they don't really have a place for him in the starting rotation.
No, there's too many good young arms that they want to develop.
indeed. And then one guy's hurt, and so it's a little thin, but it's not bad. It's not bad. And again, the real problem is the offense. Basically, they have the lowest on-base percentage in the league. They have the lowest slugging average in the league. They have the lowest isolated power average in the league. They don't get on base, and they don't move runners.
Mm.
Basically, all they do is bunt.
Yeah.
They lead the league. Well, okay, hold on. Now I'm being mean, so I'm going to stop being mean and I'm going to start being truthful.
Okay, well, you can be mean. Hold on, you can be mean and truthful. I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
No, one's objective and one's subjective.
Well, I think if you spew facts and they just are not flattering.
Okay, let's just go here.
That's not your fault.
Well, let's see. What do they lead the league in? Well, I forgot to add. They're last in home runs. Although they're tied with Nippon Ham, and they're next to last in walks, behind SoftBank, which is of course amazing. But basically, they don't strike out. What a surprise! They're basically up there trying not to strike out. They're a good base stealing team. So basically, they're fast. They're not taking big cuts, but on the other hand, they still don't hit for average, they don't draw walks, and they don't hit for extra bases. So it's really a tough slog for them to put run-scoring innings together, and I don't think having been handed this lineup, these players, I don't think, it's hard to say it's all Nishimura's fault, because it's the organization as I believe has made a decision that these are the guys we need to win with.
Right.
Small guys who are fast.
Whatever they are. Yeah. Small guys who, I mean, appear to be fast. So I'm not convinced.
They're fairly quick.
I'm not convinced all of them are fast, but yeah.
No, of course not all of them are fast. They're not as fast as Cebu is. No. But they're fairly quick. And even, Masataka Yoshida, because I've got him in right field, so he's not extremely fast, but most of that whole menagerie of little guys with bats.
The gnomes.
I don't mean to be pejorative about them. It's just those are the guys that Oryx. I mean, they're not, these guys really hustle and they really try hard and they love to play baseball and they're playing their butts off. But, you know, this was Oryx's decision that these are the guys to win games with. And I think that was the fundamental problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've got issues, but again, they have 40 wins, and the Yakult Swallows have 37, and the Chunichi Dragons have 42, and Lotte is only 44. So I mean, it's really close in both leagues, and if you want to make a four seam transition.
Sure.
All right, let's make that four-seam transition and talk about the PL race. Now, we, meaning you and I, discussed, but it was I who brought up the idea or the notion that the PL race might be over or getting close to over, and then the Hawks...
And then we discussed it after you brought it up.
Right, and the Hawks...
So I did take part.
...continued to stumble, and... now it's a race again, and I can't even believe I'm saying this, that the Nippon Ham Fighters are right there in the thick of this PL race, and it's, you know, they've had everything, they've had openers, and they've had issues with them, they've had bullpen issues, they've had starter issues, and, you know, by the way, I solved that open stat situation. Remember I said, I think if you're going to have an opener and we have a stat.
Well, the good, because I was waiting, this was probably what I was waiting for most of anything this week.
Excellent. So what I figured is in the box score, you can, just like you put an H after a guy who gets a hold, you just put an O after a pitcher who starts as an opener. And the manager designates that before the game, so everybody knows, and so you just put it in there with the score box. So
okay, that will work in English. I think it might have a problem in Japanese, because very often they just use a circle for a win. But that's, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, you're getting ahead of too much here. Just put it. Yeah, they also use the H for the hold, so they can figure it out. Put it zeros or no.
Yeah,
O's.
They could.
Okay, so anyway, So getting back to the fighters, I don't know whether I should be impressed with the whole direction that it seems like more than any team in NPB this season, the fighters have stayed the course with what their plan was in spring training and just running it out there and mixing and matching and having, like I said, the starters, the openers, the closers, the middle guys, whomever, they have guys come in and they stay the course, and lo and behold, with a little bit of, you know, fallback from the Hawks, here they are in July heading into August, and they're right there in the race. I had them finishing fifth or sixth or less than that. Below that, I don't know how they're doing this. So what have you seen from the fighters?
Well, as I've been writing pretty much nonstop about their starting pitching assignments. So basically they've got now, and here's the remarkable thing is that they essentially had two starters to begin the season. Two sort of classical, you know, if you can go six or seven innings,
quote unquote rotation guys.
When you get past Arihara and Uesawa, you look and you see, okay, Brian Rodriguez had a couple of starts, and then he had a bunch of three-inning guys. He had basically a handful of guys who were good going through the opposing batting order twice.
Right. And Takayuki Kato was getting some time, too, as well as...
Yeah, I believe he was. Yeah. And then Mizuki Hori right now is principally just an... He's not an opener, per se, because according to that definition, the opener just faces the first inning. In manager Hideki Kuriyama's book, he's basically a guy who faces the opposing batting order once. But here's the thing, he only does it once a week, which I don't quite understand the logic of. I mean, if you're going to have a guy who's going to face nine batters, and he could do it twice a week.
Right. In theory.
But.
Yeah, but.
Ostensibly, yes. Okay, so. Anyway, that's basically the way it's working. It's not based on any. It's based more on how many batters they face rather than how many pitches they throw or how many innings they pitch.
All right. So looking at the offense, I brought up the notion of Taishi Ota being an MVP candidate. And he's having an okay season, but I think, you know, I look at offensive players, I look at them first in terms of MVPs because I don't want to pick a pitcher. And I suppose Adi Hara is someone who could be a candidate because you look around at the offense and there's no one who's really dominating in any of the big categories. They're just all, you know, Sho Nakata, who has been hot recently, he is producing, but not necessarily dominating. Kotaro Kiyomiya coming back from that injury, he's not really hitting for average, but he's getting some hits on occasion. I mean, it just seems whoever they put out there, whoever Kuriyama puts out there in certain situations, they're just coming through, and they really had some momentum going recently and had a winning streak and looked really good. And they went into Cebu, they went up against Cebu at MetLife Dome and won 2 out of 3 and barely lost tonight on Sunday. So I don't know. I don't know how they're doing it so regularly in terms of putting up a lot of numbers and winning games, but they're doing it. So I guess you have to credit them. But I still look around and say, look, I don't think they have enough starting pitching and I don't think they have enough offense, but they're producing. So who am I?
I don't, yeah. Certainly their lineup is up and down and he moves lots of people in and out and, they are producing and how they're producing is kind of a mystery. I mean, they have been short on regulars. I know Wong Po Jung is now on the farm team and
the newcomer from that, Taiwan. Yeah. His first year player.
Yeah. And Kotaro Kiyomiya is basically not quite settled in yet. Which is not a surprise. He hasn't played a whole lot.
Right. I mean,
but basically, yeah, Taishi Ota and Haruki Nishikawa and Sho Nakata is having a tremendous season by his standards. Not by normal people's standards, but by his standards, which have been, you know, not as high as they used to be.
Yes. And last year, I think I did praise him a lot and say that, you know, we really, as much as we joke about him, that we really had to consider him an MVP candidate and put him in the conversation. But not so much this year, but he, you know, again, he's like this is like a team of cockroaches. You think they're gone and then they rise up and scatter and eat stuff and scare the children and then go back to wherever there was they were hiding for a while and you don't think about them and then they're back again. You know, and that's,
well, I mean, they did, and they got a heck of a lot of value out of Ryo Akiyoshi. I mean, basically the Swallows said, you know, take him off our hands.
Yeah, the reliever. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, geez. And they're saying, geez, good. We were looking for a closer.
Yes, they were. Yes, they have. But so they've been good. Oh. I'm just surprised at them. And then the Rakuten Eagles, I think they started out maybe a little bit above their heads, and they were missing their ace. Takahiro Norimoto just came back, and he's pitching okay, and they have been without Takayuki Kishi, their B ace, and but they've gotten some really steady production from Hideto Asamura, who, you know, I imagine he was never going to be able to match what he did his career season last year, but he has been right there in terms of production and being a very steady player for them, and he's really holding down the offense for them. But they've got guys going up and down. I think Zealous Wheeler hasn't, you know, he had a really good start, and we had him on the show, and I think since the end of May, he's kind of quieted down and hasn't been doing as much damage, let's say. And then you've got Jabari Brash, whom you brought up as an MVP candidate last week in that talk, and he has cooled off a little bit. So they're kind of scuffling right now. They lost again tonight at Chiba. So they're still looking to find a rhythm.
Yeah, the other thing is if you look at their outfield, you go, what happened to that outfield they used to have?
That great one.
Have you noticed that?
Yes, I have.
I'm like, well, Kazuki Tanaka. Where is that guy?
Yeah, well, he got injured, but I know they're playing. They're just playing a lot of different guys. They're playing guys, you know, I have to keep going back to my my baseball.
Yoshi's batting ninth, batting 230. Yeah, lots of changes, and I don't know if it's good or bad. Of course, I'm happy to say that Ren Wada is getting a chance to play and hitting the ball, so good for him. He got traded for Yuri Furukawa.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, so the trade with the Giants. So, yeah, But, yeah, I would like to see them have more consistency on the offensive side. And then, you know, the bullpen was really, really good, I think, April, May. And that production has kind of dropped off. So they just need to find their way again. And they got plenty of time. They've got August and September. It's going to be a long summer here. So, and since it's nice and hot, we'll see how that goes for them. You want to cross over and make a two-seam transition and talk about the Central League? So another team that had the big lead, and we actually discussed, and that was the Giants. And they've fallen, and it seemed like they couldn't get up. But at least not quickly.
Well, they did. I mean, well, of course, they had a bigger lead.
Yeah, well, they rose up today and you know, beat some gray matter out of the Tigers. But, you know, is that a case of just one game, or do you think they're looking to be, that they can be consistent with that? 16-4 was the final today, and I just don't see them. They got 16 runs on 16 hits. So,
I don't suspect that's the norm, but I also thought that in the Tigers games, they played really, really well for teams that were losing. I mean, that's, to me, it doesn't mean anything. A loss is a loss, a win is a win, but if you're barely losing,
yeah,
and you're doing most of the things right, I don't, you know, I tend to cut those teams some slack. So I think the Giants are going to be, you know, they've, one of the games they lost was, or one of the problems they had was having Ruby De La Rosa, you know,
Ruby,
first
yeah, Ruby.
Pitch of a game, give up Ruby, is that how it's pronounced? Ruby De La Rosa, give up a home run on the first pitch in a big situation.
That was the home run.
And, you know, little things. Yeah. So little things like that, but guys are going to get, you know, the guys are going to get settled in and used to how things work. They do have a lot of new guys. I don't really see a problem. I think the Giants are still the easy favorites. But having said that, what about the Hiroshima Cards?
Well, before we get to that, I just wanted to bring up the one issue that I think I talked about when we talked about Sawamura Award candidates, and I said that Tomoyuki Sugano is not even in the picture. And really, the way he's pitching, I wouldn't be surprised that if we get to the end of the season, whatever it is, October for them or November, and they announce that he's going to have some kind of procedure on something, because he just doesn't seem
right.
And
like he's trying to pitch through something right now, yeah, or something.
Yes, but yes, speaking of the Carp won again tonight. So what is that, 9 straight? So the Carp
are interesting because they had an 11-game losing streak, right?
Correct. Well, it's been a streaky season, so yes.
Here's this.
Had some streaks, but go ahead. Yes, they had the 11-game winning streak.
Well, you talk about other teams who've had some streaks. Let's talk about the teams, the 4 longest streaks in NPV this year, which is 11-9, 9-8, and 3 of those belong to the Carp.
Yeah, the Carp are the only team to have winning streaks of at least 8 games 3 times, but they also they also have the skid to go with it, the 11 game skid, was it?
So Fank had a 9-game win streak in there too, so.
And the Dragons had a winning streak of 7, and they followed that up with a skid of 8 games, but they won today when they were playing in the mirror. With this near,
that was weird.
Near matching uniforms today, but yeah.
I know. I'm going, which team is running the bases? I can't tell.
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard because I was watching from across the room today. I was not on the sports desk. But anyway, I like what the Carp are doing. I like what they're doing now. But you know, we talked about the fact before. I thought I got things right when they started out the season really bad. And I said, I was thinking, I told you guys. And then they went on the long winning streak. And I'm like, Michael Westbay, I hate you. You write too many computer programs that are right. And then after that show, it was an algorithm that he figured things out with, or that he ran, right? So, and then they went on another skid. And I said, and I was back to I told you so mode. And now they're winning again. So I'm like, I hate you, Michael Westbay. I mean, you know, it's been an up-down relationship.
Yeah, Michael's got an algorithm. I've got a Fred go rhythm.
And I've got a get out of here rhythm. Get out of here with that stuff. But yeah, I think part of the success, and I'm not going to credit him for most of the success, but I will credit him for being part of the part of the reason that the Carp have turned things around recently, and that's the rookie Kaito Kozono at shortstop. And, you know, let's face it, Kosuke Tanaka, he wasn't hitting, and that seemed to affect his defense. They moved him around in the lineup. Things weren't working. They brought Kozono up earlier in the season. And he was a kid who's coming out of high school, and I remember in camp they said, this guy can play defense. I think we talked about it on the show. That he's so smooth at shortstop, his problem is hitting. And then he came up and he was hitting, but he made a couple errors. And I think it was just either nerves or focus or just, you know, the game just being so new to him. And so they sent him back to the farm, but Tanaka just really didn't produce at all and wasn't, I shouldn't say didn't produce at all, but he just has not been his normal self. And they were determined to get Kozono some more playing time. They brought him back up. And since then, he's not only playing the great defense that we all expected, but he's hitting home runs. He's got a hitting streak. He had 4 hits the other night, almost hit for the cycle. And as you tweeted this evening, poor Kosuke Tanaka, his job has gone somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I love Kosuke Tanaka. He's a prototypical Carp guy, which means he's all business, but he's never too caught up in himself to talk.
Okay.
Always friendly and approachable. And so, you know, I wish him well, and it's not going to be easy, but Kozono, actually, I heard, you know, I hadn't seen him field. I did, however, see him hit a little bit in the spring, and I saw him hit in the preseason a little bit.
Okay.
And I thought, oh, that looks good. That looks good. And maybe people were talking about what a good hitter he was going to be, but I didn't really think much of it. I think it was this, that he hit a lot at the very end of camp, but I also knew that they weren't going to rush him. And so, which I really liked.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, hopefully, I don't know how they solved that problem. I think going forward, that's a real difficult infield to get the ball through. It was before with Tanaka, but you see the plays Kozono made. Now, I was listening on the radio tonight. I didn't actually see the play, but the announcers were going kind of berserk over a play he made today against the Swallows. So, yeah, Tanaka, you know, I was starting to think about what teams could use a shortstop. Maybe we see another trade or something.
Yeah, Colt could sure use them, I'll tell you.
Use one for sure. I think, I actually think the Buffaloes could use one. But anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then we have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The problem is the Carp don't need a pitcher maybe. I don't know, the Carp need a pitcher either, but it's hard to think about what good teams need.
What you would need or get back in a trade situation. But anyway, moving along, the Bay Stars, they pretty much embarrassed the Dragons and Daisuke Matsuzaka. They probably put him into retirement with that game. I hope so. I really, really, because I think we talked about this before. I've been calling him the mascot since the Dragons decided they were going to give him a chance. Because I really didn't think he was, I mean, looking at the
that's
way
a little
he
mean. That's a little mean.
Not as mean as you are.
Well, that's because one, John, you can't possibly be as mean as I am. It's not in your genetics.
See, so I'm
and two, but it's kind of a fan kind of meanness, you know, the guys.
I don't think so. I would have called him. I would have called him a mascot had he joined. I don't know. Maybe there's no team in NPB I wouldn't have said he's more of a mascot than, because I'm not talking about what team he's playing for. It's more about.
Okay. Having said that, he was not the Dragons' worst starting pitcher last year.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of numbers, but I mean, he threw the same. I mean, it's not like he pitched worse than he did last year when he got beaten up for 8 runs in a third of an inning.
And here's the thing. Yeah. Here's the thing. And I was curious about this because I was, you know, the day he got. The day his game went on the elevator to hell, no stops. Yeah, the express elevator to hell.
Straight down the ropes.
I looked and I thought, you know, I called it the end of his high wire act, because what I've noticed is that the typical Daisuke Matsuzaka start over the last, I guess his typical win would be 2 runs over 5 innings in which he allowed 8 hits and 3 walks.
Yeah, between 8 and 12 hits is what I would say. But yeah. That's being so, mean. Okay.
Well, I'm talking about his wins, not his losses.
Oh, well,
okay, so
they were all the same, though.
Basically, no, not really. I mean, what happened was, well, he put, you know, a lot of guys, they put things in balls in play. He keeps guys off the barrel a lot with the cutter he was able to do last year. And I guess people realize he's not going to throw his four-seam fastball, which is now about 88 miles an hour.
No way it's 88. It's like 82.
Is it 83 or something?
Yeah, I mean,
okay, 83 then. I was trying to be generous with my bad memory.
Okay.
So, but I think even he said it was 83 miles an hour. So,
anyway, Stevie Wilkerson, the position player who got the save for the Orioles the other day, was throwing harder or throwing about the same as Daisuke Matsuzaka. So the Dragons should get that guy and put him.
Okay.
Hashtag high.
He gets out.
Okay. But anyway, what I wanted to say this is, as I wrote that, I thought, well, what is it about Matsuzaka? And then I looked, and I looked at his how he pitched in with runners in scoring position last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a very ordinary. I think his OPS, hitters OPS against him overall.
Okay.
Was a little higher than average, the Japan average. But what happened was, when he had runners in scoring position, opposing batters' OPS last season was 527.
Zowie zoinks.
Yeah, so what you see is, he was, you know, he had one of those bizarre seasons, like, you know, Makoto Kaneko, you remember, currently, I think he's still a batting coach with the Nippon Hand Fighters, had these. And this is a guy who was like forever hurt. He was constantly in pain. And he said, I said, what is it about you and batting with runners in scoring position? It's bizarre. He said, well, look, I hurt too much to concentrate most of the time during the game.
Right.
So basically, I only concentrate when the game's on the line.
Gotcha.
When I have a chance to, because I can't deal with it.
Gotcha.
It's just too hard for me. My body's just in too much agony all the time. So that was him. And Matsuzaka was, you know, it worked for him last year. It worked for him his first start this year. And I don't know what it is that's working for him. Maybe he's paying particular, maybe he's making better pitches. We have seen pitchers like this who've been exceedingly good with runners in scoring position. Masahiro Tanaka was pretty much amazing throughout his career.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not.
But he could actually,
mind you, he had.
He had
actually had five pitches he could execute and make you wish you weren't born. But Matsuzaka makes you, you know, when you get out against Matsuzaka, you think, give me another chance.
Yeah. So it wasn't.
But
good.
Anyway, that's what I found out about Matsuzaka. So I don't know if it's the end. I don't know if it deserves to be the end, but okay. I don't know.
Okay, well.
But John knows.
Well, no, I don't know either. All I said was I hope that it was in, that we didn't have to see this. I'd rather see them give the innings to some of these young pitchers they're trying to develop. Now, granted, I complained earlier a few shows back, I said they're basically the same kind of trio of right-handers who, you know, they don't throw exceedingly hard. They all need to locate. But I think they can all take a book out, or just a page out of the Yuya Yanagi book and try to learn from him. He's the kind of same kind of guy. He doesn't throw exceedingly hard, but he throws a lot of pitches, and he just got better with his command, and he stopped hanging breaking pitches and started throwing sharper breaking pitches and keeping them in the zone and when he needed to, and going out of the zone when he needed to. But anyway, enough talk about the Dragons. They're not.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy who went to Driveline or something, or worked with a consultant, you know, to make some really small adjustments with his pitch tunneling or with his executability, so that he's able to repeat the motion more.
Who's that, Matsuzaka?
Something with his balance or something. No, Yanagi.
Yeah, well. Enough about the Dragons. They're not going anywhere. So let's.
Yes.
I mean, look, the
banished from this conversation.
Yes, for now. I mean, no, not for now, because we're going to talk about DeNA and how DeNA pretty much, they won 3 out of 4 against the Dragons at Yokohama, and then they won 2 out of 3 at Nagoya Dome against the Dragons in, I don't know, over the past 10 days or so. So they're kind of feasting off of the Dragons. So they got a good record, but you've really got to beat some of the top teams too. So And I know the Bay Stars, they won two and tied one at Koshien, and that was pretty big for them. So let's see if they can keep the momentum and keep going. They're really getting close to the Giants, and you know, you've got the Carp to deal with, and I think the Tigers are really good. And speaking of the Tigers, what a great series they had for them, I thought, at Tokyo Dome this weekend. And Yanverdis Solarte, their new addition, he just reminds me of Akihiro Yano, the manager, except he's playing on the field. He's really excitable, and you can tell what's going on in the game just by watching him and what he's doing. And he hits this home run to win in his first game on Saturday, and he's dancing.
And he's got a dance.
And he's
got a dance, which to the uninitiated, and maybe for this old 70s people in our audience, is not that different from Steve Martin and Dan Aykroyd doing their wild and crazy dive.
Guys. Yeah, you're right.
Pivoting the hips and shake. So he does it, except he does it more stylishly than they do. But he's exuberant.
I love it. And it's, you know, it's the I don't know if you feel this way, but I feel this way. Whenever you go to a Tigers game on the field, it seems like the players are just all, nobody's like that. No one's happy and just showing emotion and showing how much they love the game. It's always so serious and kind of dark. Like there's a cloud over.
Well, that's what Matt Merton told me about Tsuyoshi Nishioka's impact with the Tigers. He got people to lighten up because he could be, you know, goofy.
Yeah, well, they...
That was the positive side of Nishioka, is that he could be goofy.
I know you love hearing that, but... But yeah, it just...
No, but I mean...
No, but you need that. It just can't always be so...
There's something... Exactly. You can't be overly serious. And it's easy, I think, with Tomoaki Kanemoto as the manager to be baseball serious.
Yeah. And so I heard the announcers talking on TV, and they said, you know, just having Solarte there has given Marte a little bit of kick in his get along. He seems to be a little bit
more energized. But as soon as they signed him, and he hit a home run the first day they signed him, or the day his press conference, and people were saying, basically what they were implying was that it was like, oh, the impact of Solarte is that Jeffrey Marte is going to lose playing time if he doesn't get the lead out.
Well,
therefore, he's more motivated now to hit. So basically the tone, I'm just interpreting the Osaka media for you.
Gotcha.
The tone is that basically he's a lazy foreigner he has the proclivity to be a lazy foreigner who we need to motivate.
All right. Well, good luck with that. But
of course we wish you nothing best, and that is not our view.
Yeah. They looked motivated. They looked like they were having fun. In this series against the Giants. And the Giants, you know, they won today. They beat, like we said, 16-4. Beat the brains out of them today. But, you know, the Tigers won the series. And two really good games they had to win the series. So good there. But on the downside, we've got to talk about the Swallows really quickly. They're in last place. They dropped to 19 games under 500 today with the loss to the Carp. And I tweeted it out. It looked like Tetsuto Yamada had that, you know, arrow through the heart kind of a look tonight after this loss. He just really looked dejected, really looked like he was, his soul had been ripped away. And I don't know. I always look at these second half games, and I really like the fact that three teams are making the playoffs now, because it makes every game must-see TV. But I call it the business end of the season, and you got teams that really are looking to make a move and try to get in the playoffs, I don't think the Swallows, pretty soon they're going to be among the teams that just don't even have a chance. And their games are going to be a waste of, the mop-up games. It's going to be the rest of the mop-up game, mop-up season or mop-up September if they don't put some more wins together. So I hope they can hang in there and at least be relevant, you know, to the last month, because it doesn't look good.
Well, they've got all the tools they need to be relevant, but on a daily basis, that's hard. They could pick it up against somebody, but yeah, it's hard.
Okay. All right. One note, We rarely, because we do talk about the draft, so I'll say we rarely talk about high school baseball on the show, but this week had kind of an unprecedented, not even unprecedented, but just an event that took the attention or grabbed the attention of the nation, it seemed, and that was Roki Sasaki, a high school pitcher for Ofunato High School. And usually in these regional qualifying games for the Summer Koshien Tournament, teams tend to use their aces to, especially fringe teams, will use their ace pitchers to get through whatever they have to get through in this qualifier to get to the Koshien Tournament. Well,
use everybody you have to get through.
As much as you have to, yeah. And so Sasaki was sat down in a game, and his team ends up losing to 12-2 to Hanamaki Higashi High School, famous for producing Shohei Ohtani and Yusei Kikuchi, and did not make the tournament. And immediately I heard on the news, I saw on Twitter, people started talking in the office, and even my wife, who's, I would say, she only feigned interest in sports when we started dating so that we'd have something to talk about. But she really, you know, as soon as we got married and she didn't have to pay attention to sports anymore, she stopped paying attention. And she brought up the topic to me the other day. She said, "What do you think about this situation?" And I said, "Well, if the kid is being protected, I think that's a great thing. We have strict pitch limits in the United States. In some areas, they don't just count the innings, they count the pitches made. And so, you know, sometimes it could be an inning that a kid throws that takes, you know, 50 pitches or whatever to get through." So her attitude was, well, you know, he probably wanted to pitch. They robbed him of the opportunity to pitch, and they robbed the team of an opportunity to maybe get to Koshien. And I'm like, yeah, but the kid's, you know, he's going to be fine. He's going to have a future. And they said, well, what about...
We can hope. You know, we can hope.
Yeah, what about the kids who... That was going to be their last opportunity to play at Koshien and to make that tournament. I'm like, well, that's the way sports work. I mean, sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. So if you don't get to go there, you don't get to go there because you lost, because you're not good enough. And that's the way it's a meritocracy. So you wrote some stuff about it. I have seen a lot of things about it. It was on TV a lot. People were talking. I'm glad the conversation is being generated. I hope the pitch count system or some system of pitch counts eventually results. But I don't think it's going to be soon. But you said something before.
Well, I think actually it is going to be soon.
Yeah.
I think it's coming. I think within a couple of years we're going to see massive change. And I think the reason we're going to see the massive change, I'll try to be really succinct here, is that basically when Niigata Prefecture last year decided to introduce pitch limits, they were very mild, 100 pitches. You know, you can't pitch another inning after in a day after you threw 100 pitches.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you could have thrown 160 pitches and then you'd be back tomorrow as long as you know the 160th pitch wasn't in the next inning. So anyway, the High School Baseball Federation went ballistic. How dare you?
Right.
This is not your job. Even though they were only their rules were for their prefecture, had nothing to do with the National Federation. It was for their spring tournament. So anyway, the National Federation went nuts. But a lot of people in government, especially sports minister, the head of the sports agency Daichi Suzuki, said this is really a bold move, and people were coming out on their side. So they had to they had to do something.
Okay.
So the Federation brought up a panel of experts, included doctors, included former major leaguer Satoru Komiyama, included the current head of the Niigata Federation, but also included Daisuke Matsuzaka's old coach, Motonori Watanabe. And this is the thing. Okay, so anyway, they've met and they've looked at, and I think they basically picked people who would not be swayed by evidence that there are serious problems. Unfortunately, the evidence was too strong. So in April, they met and said, they basically said, pitch limits are coming, mandated rest days are coming.
All right.
Okay, now, Mr. Watanabe said, I believe it was April, it might have been in June, he said, well, I think we have to work for a solution that won't include something like pitch limits or rest days. And he was one of the, so I think we can do something else. You know, we can, let's not change anything and say we did.
Hashtag high heat.
His attitude with Sasaki was, and I'll quote, let him play. That's what high school baseball is about. Rising to heights, achieving spectacular things. Now, my downside of the whole Sasaki thing, and just to be, if you want to read blow by blow, it's on my website. Most of that's free. He pitched 194 pitches on Sunday in the tournament, in the prefectural fourth round. He threw 102. He had two days off.
The 21st.
That was the 21st Sunday. And then on Wednesday, he threw 129 pitches. However, he already had some discomfort in his elbow before he threw those 129 pitches.
Wow, yeah.
Now, the day he didn't throw, he had muscle stiffness.
You think?
So this is really a bad sign.
Yeah.
So people are saying, oh, his arm's safe, but I'm not certain because I was listening to a person who measures the stress on elbows and ligaments and such, and they use a sleeve to measure it when pitchers throw. And basically, essentially the problem is how hard you throw and how how hard you throw within a certain motion. And how well conditioned your elbow is to handle that stress. The problem is that Mr. Yohei Kokubo, the manager of Ofunato High School, has been very careful not to let Roki Sasaki pitch. Now, Roki Sasaki is of news because he throws 100 miles. He's thrown 100 miles an hour on a couple of occasions. He threw 100 miles an hour on Sunday in that 194 pitch, one pitch. So he's news because of that. Major league teams are interested. But the point is, he doesn't pitch a lot. He's been held back a lot. But all of a sudden, he's thrown 451 pitches over the case of the course of about 2.5 weeks.
Okay.
And 300-something over the span of a few days. And I'm really concerned that his elbow, that the actual number of pitches he threw was less of a problem than the fact that his elbow may not have been conditioned for it, and that he might already have a tear.
Yeah. All right, well, you can...
But that's my concern.
Yeah, you can read more about it. Jim did do some posts about it, and like I said, we rarely discuss high school baseball or the happenings of high school baseball on the show, but I did want to touch on this because it just seemed to be a national topic.
Yeah.
That just blew up this whole week.
Yeah, to me. Yeah. To me, the irony was this guy was national news because he didn't play.
Right.
You know, how often does that happen?
Not very often, and again, that's why it blew up. So anyone who has a comment or a question, send it to ykyujohn@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter with the hashtag HighHeat, @JBWPodcast, or let us know how you feel on the homepage. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening to a long one. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.